Welcome to the Unfit Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Unfit Podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. I'm Emma McGarthy, Head of Unfit Sustainable Policy Institute, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Shari Madeira, newly appointed Senior Vice President of Public Policy and Government Affairs at Mastercard and co-chair of the Future of Sustainable Data Alliance, or FOSDA; Matthew Blake, who is Head of Financial and Monetary Systems at the World Economic Forum; and Halin Aziri, who is Platform Curator for Financial Services at the World Economic Forum as well. And today, we'll be discussing the need for talent development and capacity building for ESG experts in the financial sector, and also to meet ESG data requirements. So welcome to you all, and lovely to have you joining me today. So to jump right in, it's becoming increasingly evident that we need to develop talent to meet ESG and sustainable finance data requirements. And obviously, skills shortages are potentially preventing asset managers and investors from reaching their ESG targets and their reporting requirements. So my first question is, how can we fill these gaps and holes that have been identified with these ESG talents? And maybe Matthew and Halle, I'll go to you first.
Terrific. Yeah, I'll kick it off. I think it's a vital question. There's absolutely a role for the private sector and academia to team up on this, in particular, given the fact that the sustainability space writ large is evolving at a very rapid pace. And it's critical that, academic institutions and institutions that provide accreditation are at the forefront of that evolution as well. And clearly there's a role for the private sector to liaise with those institutions. I think this particular body of work is, and Shari can expand on this, is one critical element of a broader collaboration on the Future of Sustainable Data Alliance. And we really feel that the talent component is kind of the glue that keeps all of the pieces together, given the fact that we all need to evolve our thinking and our skill sets to ensure that we are able to incorporate sustainability into the way that we operate as professionals. So very much a live discussion and a vibrant one, and one that is certainly evolving at a rapid rate.
Thanks, Matthew. And Halle, do you have anything to add to that before we go to Shari?
I think Matthew said it really well. I think the main way to fill these gaps that we currently have in ESG talent really is through education, and whether that's through companies who are reskilling their workforce, which is increasingly happening, or universities and institutions who are offering ESG and sustainability credentials. We're really seeing a lot of growth on the education side of things. You know, when we started talking about this topic of talent development capacity building, there was just a handful of schools and universities last year who were talking about this, but that has grown exponentially in the past even 6 months. I'm sure you heard that Stanford University is even starting their own school dedicated just to sustainability this fall. So it's things like that that are really showing that not only is the private sector taking this topic seriously, but education and university institutions are really looking to expand this focus too.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to show that it is being taken seriously. So Jerry, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that no one can get away from the fact that sustainability is here to stay. And maybe the definition of sustainability and how investment firms are looking at deploying capital may be shifting and changing. But certainly I think that this discipline is now absolutely rocketing to the top of the desirability list when you're looking at trying to build talent. It's based on very solid foundations. So it's been one of the studies that FOSDA did very early was asking global institutional investors about their view on the data landscape and how to use it. And it was very clear, 98% of global institutional investors take ESG data into consideration when making investment decisions. And that is a global survey. So we're talking about, all corners of the earth, including emerging markets. But those same group said that 83% of them cite data as the obstacle to effective assessment. So again, where we're looking at both sides of this coin, and of course, just the availability, just the fact that data exists, that certainly isn't going to be able to solve the problem. We need to be able to have the brains, the people that are part of the ecosystem in order to be able to make sense of data sets and be able to deploy that capital along the lines of how it is that data is being consumed, used, et cetera. So I think this really goes to the heart of all of our net zero commitments, the commitments to looking at a just transition out of COVID, and certainly sort of looking at our climate goals. So, you know, again, sort of, you know, doubling down on what my colleagues have already said, yeah, absolutely fundamental to making sure that this works.
Yeah, absolutely. So what policies, strategies, are required to do this, firstly in kind of recruiting the right talent, but also, as Helena had mentioned, kind of upskilling and enhancing the current talent, and especially with this data question, is it kind of we just need to completely find new talent, or is there this potential to kind of actually upskill the talent that are already working in data, but actually just moving them more towards this kind of ESG discussion? And Sherry, I'll go to you first.
Yeah, thanks, Emma. I mean, as we said, it's rapidly moving. So the answer is, yeah, we got to do all that. If we look at it from sort of, I guess, a corporate point of view, there is a huge, huge interest from more junior levels to become part of the solution for, you know, deploying funds through the financial system in a sustainable way. But they don't have the experience. And they don't have the years under their belt in order to be able to take perhaps what has been more traditionally senior roles within an organization. But the more senior stakeholders are probably have less years under their belt knowing and using sustainable data or ESG data in order to make decisions. So, you know, there needs to be sort of, you know, a whole of life cycle upskilling and capacity building for us to be able to achieve what we're looking to do. So ESG roles are moving up the corporate ladder, but the junior entrants also need to be able to have, you know, a really strong basis by which they can continue to learn to grow. And then you add another element to this, which is that, you know, what we are talking about in terms of ESG and sustainability keeps on moving. You know, it certainly keeps us on our toes at the Future of Sustainable Data Alliance, thinking about what's next. But just a couple of examples. I mean, we didn't really talk about biodiversity and nature even a couple years ago. And now it is very much dominating some of the thinking. The Task Force on Nature-Based Financial Disclosures has put out one of its first frameworks. The TCFD is being widely adopted now in jurisdictions where it didn't before. We've recently seen policy changes in the U.S. That the SEC is demanding disclosures again, you know, a new paradigm for companies based there. And we have a trend that's moving towards impact investing, which it looks at that data from the S and the G even more deeply, but understanding how it can be used to be able to direct capital. So we're in a fast moving environment that's changing the topic sets. We've got junior, keen, eager talent getting into the market without the experience, and more senior managers in the financial world that perhaps are less conversant with the sustainability and environmental nomenclature and data. So we got our work cut out, but I think that there is a keenness and an eagerness that balances out some of those challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So Halle and Matthew, bringing you in, what are your kind of, what's your perspective on this, and what strategies and policies do you think we need in terms of recruitment, but also kind of driving that development within the task force that you already have, the workforce you already have?
Well, I can talk about kind of what's happening in the reskilling and upskilling within companies thing. I have the example of PwC, who is investing heavily in developing their current talent. They announced plans to invest $12 billion and create 100,000 new ESG jobs over the next 5 years. You know, the chairman said that while previously they were focused on the reporting aspects of ESG, now they want every employee to be familiar with these issues. So what they're doing is they're taking a number of their staff, including auditors, management consultants, and tax advisors, and they want them to be versed in the challenges of climate change that are going to be coming years. That includes how climate risks affect deal valuations, how companies can reduce carbon emissions. And so I think it's really impressive that companies are looking to do this within their own workforce as well.
I think much has been said on this already. I would just add that, you know, if you're managing money or if you're a corporate, the message from your investor class and the message from your employees is the same. You need to take this seriously. And so you've got a barrage coming your way. And I think ESG and the broader sustainability narrative must be inculcated in every aspect of how, you know, we think about business and also how capital is allocated. And that means the risk function, that means the investment advisory and let's just say money management function, that's certainly across compliance and the way that we recruit and hire. And so this, it's permeating all aspects of business and specifically financial services. And so it's not about any particular cohort per se or generation that needs to be more focused on it more substantially than another. It's a level setting exercise from all, you know, sort of all angles of seniority and essentially every angle of an organization that's active in this space.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something we've talked a lot about in SBI. This kind of, we're taking a more holistic approach to ESG and it kind of just being embedded throughout the whole business. So what are the most pressing skills and kind of talents and capacities that are required in order to kind of drive this ESG agenda into businesses and to kind of look at this approach? Sherry, I'll go to you first. What kind of talent are we looking for? What are the skills that is required to drive this?
Yeah, thanks. I do think, and I guess I would, being sort of the chair of the Future of Sustainable Data Alliance, I think that there really needs to be a focus on understanding and embracing data, because data can certainly be the solution. It can also be the problem. And we need to be able to understand sort of not data for data's sake, but, you know, data as it applies to the use case. And those use cases are variable. And so actually backgrounds and skills could be very, very valuable coming from a heavily regulatory environment, especially in the financial services field, obviously, not only from a regulator, but from regulated institutions, because part of this is disclosure for compliance reasons. And so understanding what that flow and what that use case is, I think, would be very valuable. The second piece is not only looking at data sets, but also looking at sort of how they're used in methodologies, how they're used in an analysis. I think that there's a lot of talk out there in the market about sort of the disparity of various different scores for ESG, the various different models you can use, different methodologies, different tools. And, you know, of course, this can be confusing, but it can also be very rich. And as we sort of have the talent that can make sure that they're applying the right methods, tools, data sets to the purpose at hand, you know, that's the sort of analytical skill set that is really needed here. But I think that, you know, this is sort of a combination of understanding data, especially when it comes to sort of very, very long-standing data sets like sustainability, changes in weather patterns, changes in impacts on the earth, and, you know, the projections that come out of reports like the IPCC, married with much, much nearer term, very traditional financial valuation requirements, and using data to think about, you know, next quarter, next year, the next 5 years for a business or for an industry segment. So, you know, I think that the opportunity for learning is great. The skill set, I think, has got to, be driven from a curiosity of building from those data bricks to be able to understand sort of how they apply to the use cases that are going to continue to vary.
So obviously we've touched upon kind of there being this high demand for ESG professionals and talent. And it's obviously quite in a good position for those people who have that expertise. So how can companies stand out and actually make sure that they recruit the best and that they're kind of getting the best talent that they can into their organizations. And Matthew, Hala, maybe I'll go to you first.
Yeah, I might just, before Hala comes in, make a parallel to an area within the context of the World Economic Forum where our founder and chairman, Professor Schwab, has been very, very much devoted, and that is around stakeholder capitalism. And I think the corollary here is that an institution, in order to attract and retain talent, has to think beyond profit. And I think we've been espousing that view for 50 years. And I think it's a fair reflection to say for much of that arc of time, we were perhaps ahead of the curve. And there was very much a quarter by quarter, pressure, and that remains. I don't want to say it doesn't, it remains. But I think there is an orientation shift here. And whereas before I said, generationally and across the seniority cohorts, I think sustainability and ESG needs to be kind of driven across the board. I do feel that younger generations in this regard, Generation Z, millennials, are very much focused on a narrative. They want to understand, why am I working? They want to be able to answer, why am I working for this particular organization? What is it doing beyond just paying a paycheck so I can, pass that money through to rent and so on? It needs to be more of a fulfilling value proposition. And I think the, at the core here, this is the transition that we are on, which is very much stakeholder oriented. And the key part of that thinking is, how do you contend with societal issues? How do you contend with environmental externalities? And that's kind of a fundamental shift and trajectory that we are on collectively. And I think this body of work around talent is about, raising tide, pushing people in a particular direction and allowing for resources to flow adequately and transparently to those who are curious to meet that need. Hala, anything further to add on that piece?
I think the good part of going last or second is everyone says all the good things first and there's nothing for me to say. I think Matthew hit it on the head with his answer. I think there's going to be a real fight for the best candidates. People are calling this a war for talent. And I think what companies really need to ensure that they're doing is that they're walking the walk of what their sustainability changes are going to be, because many of these recruits really believe in the transformational power of ESG and sustainability, and they want to make sure they work for a company that reflects these values.
Yeah, absolutely. Sherry, do you have anything to add to this?
Yeah, I mean, the whole strong ESG values attracting talent, absolutely. But one other thing to think about, and actually there's a couple of interesting articles out there about where ESG is placed within the hierarchy of a company. And that varies a lot, but there is definitely a trend upwards. Chief Sustainability Officer reporting into the CEO is very usual now, or much more usual than it was before. And I think that is an area for attraction of new talent as well. Burying your CSO in multiple stacks of management, it really doesn't allow that same sort of priority access to the C-suite that's needed. There's a concept I think that's being sort of heralded in recruitment circles, ESG 2.0. So 1.0 was trying to make sure you had, some good talent in your organization. 2.0 means that you've got talent that's also leadership, that is making sure that this is embedded in a company and on all of the right agendas. And one other thing to think about, again, this is perhaps coming sort of more slowly up the outside, is where you're located and where you're attracting your talent. I think we're all familiar with the sort of Silicon Valley effects, right? So you've got your innovators and they breed off an ecosystem of knowledge and sharing and development. And when you think about ESG, there's an opportunity to do something similar in various centers around the world. If we look at the index that comes out now, it's I think the ninth index on thinking about the Global Green Finance Index and where in the world, you know, ranks highly. And London has ranked number one for a while, and this is on various different factors. I mean, I'd like to see talent being one of those factors very specifically, because that can really, really drive some of these things. I don't think it's called out as specifically. So it's one of the metrics, but is embedded in it. And if we look down the list for 2022, which just came out at the end of April, London, Amsterdam, San Francisco, Stockholm, New York, Zurich, Luxembourg. And these are not the global financial centers that you might be seeing, including sort of a New York, a Singapore, a Hong Kong. But these are centers that are prioritizing green and sustainable finance. And again, that's something to think about in terms of if you're attracting talent, and you're a financial institution, do you want to be part of some of those hubs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. You touched on a couple of things there, but, I think the first thing that I wanted to go a little bit more into is how ESG roles have expanded and developed over the last 2 years. Obviously, the kind of concept of ESG has really grown over the last couple of years. It's something that is kind of becoming a much bigger focus. Matthew, do you have any perspective on this?
Yeah, I'd probably plead the same here, other than the fact that I think Sherry's point around, in a hierarchical way, the CSO tying directly into, you know, the CEO. I mean, it harkens back to an experience that I witnessed firsthand coming out of the global financial crisis, but related to a chief risk officer. I mean, the risk function in many institutions was kind of buried, right? And one of the key findings from regulators, interestingly, was that proximity to the business, and also, ergo, the independence of that function, and also the importance of that function must be amplified, right? And that has to be, that amplification isn't just, you know, through lip service, it's through codification via the governance structure of the institution. And I think Sherry nailed it in that regard, in the sense that the CSO is on that trajectory, and I think that is indicative of the rising prominence of sustainability considerations at an institutional level, and the seriousness in which institutions are taking that particular domain.
Yeah. Sherry, do you have anything to add to this before I move on to the next question?
I guess, you know, it's about sort of why as well. So why is this going up? Yes, of course, there's a demand globally. Yes, there is a requirement, especially if sort of you're a multinational or a listed company or a company that has shareholders, in order to be able to be fulfilling your obligations. But I always think of that as a three-legged stool, the most stable stool. It is, if you're going to be thinking about ESG and sustainability for a company, and you're leading that as a CSO or part of that function, you're thinking about three things. First thing is, what is it your company represents, and how is it that you are disclosing and are as transparent as possible, that it, not only emissions, but, you know, your social and diversity policies, and what is it that you're fulfilling there? How is it that you're making a positive impact? The second pillar is thinking about, you know, what is it you're offering to the market? You know, your services, your products. How is it that when you talk about embedding ESG and sustainability in your business, how is that manifested in terms of what you're delivering to your customer base and throughout the supply chain? And I guess the third pillar is thinking about what is your role in influencing externally? You know, are there policies that you should be thinking about, sort of where it is that you're adding value to rise all boats? I mean, this is such a borderless issue and topic that if a company has got all those three things in sight, you know, your own ESG footprint, thinking about how it is you're offering products and services to the market with that in mind. And thirdly, what is it you're doing to help influence and create positive policies? You know, those are all incredibly big, impactful leadership points to make. And there has to be a seniority that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. So another thing that you touched on, Sherry, briefly, was this kind of global nature of this talent. And that's something I'd like to go a little bit deeper into. So, are there different jurisdictions which are kind of, better equipped to fill this talent gap, or have made kind of particular strides in filling this talent gap? Hello, Matthew, is there anything you could add to this discussion?
I'll just take a quick stab here. I think the value proposition of a financial center is multifaceted. You need obviously a concentration of institutions that attracts the talent base. But to just harken back to where we started, you also have universities and academic institutions that are part of that ecosystem. And I think these pieces go absolutely hand in hand. So if we're thinking about comparative advantage around the world, be it London and New York and, you know, Hong Kong and Shanghai, and you move around the globe here, when if you're a municipality, if you're running one of these, at the helm of one of these cities, and you're thinking about where you stack up vis-a-vis others and how you attract the best individuals from around the world in a particular domain, you have to think about these component parts collectively. How do I serve as a platform for business in a particular domain? How do I attract the best talent to support those endeavors? And I think working with universities to fulfill that mandate is critical.
I can just jump in with another thought, which is that while some countries might be ahead of others, every region is making this a priority. There's not a single region or country in the world that is not thinking about ESG and sustainability right now. And I think all of those jobs will be growing over the coming years. You know, between 2016 and 2021, the U.S. experienced 70% growth in green jobs. Europe during that same time grew by 41%. And the Asia Pacific was really not that far behind with 30% growth in hiring. So I think every region is trying to get there. Some might get there faster than others, but it is important for every single area.
Sherry, anything to add to this?
I think it's realistic to say that, you know, if we look at back to COP26 and look forward to COP27, you know, I think that there were a lot of commitments made from countries around the world, on net zero targets and actions. And frankly, that's what ricochets down through the system as to how is it that how do we fulfill that? You know, how as people, as corporates, as investors, you know, what part do we play? And of course, you know, the building blocks of that is trying to make sure that we're measuring it and managing it. And again, that data comes into play. So when we talk about global footprints, there is a difference in data density across different jurisdictions. And that's a fact. And you know, is it strictly along the lines of the maturity of the market? No, not necessarily. There is sort of depending on the priority of that government in that region and that a jurisdiction, there may be more data density than would be assumed on the basis of either size of market or maturity of market. But you know, that variation is something to sort of be aware of. And I think that is one of the more difficult areas to navigate when we're talking about how talent comes in at a multinational level, or being able to think about how to evaluate companies and organizations that work across borders, because not all the data is going to be available. And then you risk the three E's of data, you know, errors, extrapolation, and estimation. Which end up, again, you know, needing a level of rigor and professionalism in the talent work stream. So all of this is not, insurmountable. But again, it comes back to sort of one of the things that, you know, this work stream at FOSDA is doing as well, is how is it that we can really upskill people? Because this is this is going to be a generational calling. This is a new segment in terms of being able to be a excellent professional in it, and we need to make sure that everyone has the tools.
Yeah, so you mentioned the work stream, and that's definitely something we wanted to go into today. So obviously the World Economic Forum and the Future Sustainable Data Alliance are working together on a talent and development work stream. So could you tell me a little bit about the objectives of this work stream, what you're planning to do over the next kind of year or so, and the achievements that you already have? And maybe I'll go to our World Economic Forum colleagues first, Halle and Matthew.
Sure, I can begin. Yes, so the World Economic Forum has been working with FOSDA, along with our other partners at the Oxford Sustainable Finance Group and ASIFMA, to answer two fundamental questions that we've been discussing throughout this this podcast, which is what skills gaps or needs exist in relation to data analysis for sustainable finance, and how is this capacity being developed today? And as Sherry has mentioned already, this is a very fast-changing topic, and we wanted a way to answer this question and have the solution still be relevant 6 months later. And we knew we couldn't do that with a static document, so what we have created is a unique website that the public can use to learn more about ESG and sustainable finance. And also where experts can share their insights and institutions that offer these skills. So there are several different components to this site. And the first one, it offers a knowledge hub. And that helps everyone from the novice to the ESG professional expand their understanding of ESG skills and needs. The site also offers a curated case studies, and everything from the case studies have everything from ESG skills to climate risk analysis. And then we also use the World Economic Forum strategic intelligence tool to share the latest articles on ESG from hundreds of publications from around the world. So it's kind of like a one-stop shop of getting all of your information on ESG and data and skills. And then the second component, which we're really excited about, highlights the many universities and institutions that are currently offering courses, certificates, and master's programs in sustainability and ESG. Now, I'm sure we have not captured every institution, but we see this website as an interactive forum, and we are looking forward to hearing from other experts and to continue to add more universities and institutions as this topic continues to grow. And we even have a place within the website that allows anyone to kind of tell us more information about what they're doing. So it really can be interactive, and we can include as many different resources as we can.
Matthew, anything to add there?
Its critical feature is that it's a highly dynamic tool. It is geared to, let's say, all levels of familiarity as it relates to the space. So from the novice to the expert. And it continues to evolve, and our hope is that it serves as an amazing portal into this evolving landscape of sustainability and the nexus of data in particular and acquisition of skills.
Wonderful. And Sherry, as FOS the chair, what are your thoughts on the work stream and what you're hoping that kind of, you know, FOS will get out of this and the general objectives that you have?
Yeah, thanks, Emma. I really want to call out the World Economic Forum and the team, you know, across FOSDA on achieving this and having it launch. Because there's two objectives here from a FOSDA perspective. Number one is to raise the awareness of the fact that this is a bottleneck to achieving our global aims. If we don't have the right talent and we're not able to invest in them, we have a risk. It's not just the data, it's those that can be able to use the data. And hopefully we could also sort of raise that awareness to the policymakers, regulatory and government community to see what kind of support can be given to this education segment, because it's quite specialized, but it's absolutely critical. And then the second objective is to not just talk about it, to do something. And that's what we have here, which is a great way of convening those that are interested in this topic to be able to navigate a global opportunity matrix. You know, where is it that I can find out about this? How is it I can do some self-learning? What courses are there? What credentials can I gain? And certainly I know that that the team has reached out across sort of that learning community, not just through academia, but through groups like the CFA Institute, who already have a quite well-recognized sustainable finance qualification and others like it. So, you know, it's something to, at the very least, sort of be that convening place where people can add to it and continually make a dynamic environment. So I'm just really excited that we're not only sort of raising the bar and raising the awareness, but we're giving people, you know, the meat on the bones to be able to move forward with their aspirations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's such an important initiative. If we're really going to drive ESG and sustainability, we need the talent, and we need to kind of work on driving that talent and ensuring that talent is there. So I think it's a brilliant and incredibly important initiative. So thank you all. Do we have any kind of final thoughts that we would like to our listeners to take away to take away with them? Sherry, maybe you first. Any final thoughts?
I guess just that, you know, we keep using the term ESG. Sometimes we use the word sustainability just to keep everyone awake and, you know, make sure people are still listening. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, what we're really talking about here is making sure that we have data, those in the ecosystem that can manage the data and be able to interpret it for us so that we can make good decisions. So that may be that it's towards impact investing. It may be that it's towards supporting an SDG based investment model. It may be for use internally. It doesn't necessarily need to be a private or public company. You know, all of these skills are going to be incredibly needed going forward. So, you know, I guess the take home is it's not just about an alphabet soup. It's about making sure that we've got the people to help us navigate that data for the best purposes.
Lovely. Thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. So you can subscribe to this and all other OnFit podcasts on our channel. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to the OnFit podcast.